This morning we are privileged to welcome Lama Tera as our guest speaker. She will introduce us to Buddhism as well as lead us through a Buddhist chant and song. Lama Tera graduated from York University and the Toronto Montessori Institute. In 1975, she met Buddhism through master teachers, the 16th Karmapa, Kalu Rinpoche, and Bokar Rinpoche. She studied and did retreats, including the traditional three-year retreat under Kalu Rinpoche's direction in India and North America. Under Bokar Rinpoche's direction and at his request, Lama Tera has supported his North America Mahamudra seminar for the past 10 years. She currently lives in Sydney in semi-retreat and continues to lead meditation seminars. She also leads the meditation held in our church building on Saturdays as part of our adult spiritual education program. Let us proceed to worship.
Good morning. How are you? No, really, how are you? For a moment, taking a look at yourself. How are you physically? Are you uncomfortable? At ease? How about mentally? Is your mind busy or still? Emotionally? Is there turbulence? Is there something quiet? According to the Buddhist view, we're in an ocean of suffering, kind of immersion in suffering. And probably if any one of us was asked at any one point, are you suffering? We'd probably think, no, that's kind of a word we say for war-torn countries or natural disasters. I'm okay. But really the meaning of suffering has meaning including things like struggle, frustration, disappointment, loss, pain. We couple with this also in the Buddhist view a contemplation on impermanence. Everything we experience in this life is changeable and has the nature of being impermanent, even the suffering. And then we add on to that we have a human birth. We have a human life. Well, we might think, of course we do, doesn't everybody? It's pretty easy to take that for granted, but it's actually very special that we do have a human life, that we have particular abilities due to that human life. We have very straightforward ones, like being able to hear, being able to see, touch, smell, taste. We have the potential to eliminate suffering. Right. Not just diminish it, not get rid of some of it, but we've potentially got the ability to totally eliminate suffering. How? How could that be? It comes through our actions, through how we use that discerning mind, through what efforts we make, physical efforts, through our speech, and even the basis of both of those, the thoughts we have in our mind. So, coming back to this word suffering, what's the cause of suffering? Where did it come from? How come it's so pervasive that it's as if we're in an ocean of it? And it's due to an innocent mistake. It's one that all of us share. There's a bodhicitta prayer, and bodhicitta meaning holding first and foremost the wish for the welfare of others. And it goes like this. Sentient beings fill all that space fills. Everyone, without a single exception, has been my parent. Each and every one has helped me in countless lives. All of them, though wishing for happiness, accomplished suffering. What a pity. So that's that innocent mistake again. We all have the wish for happiness. We all put our energy into and our effort into bringing about happiness. So how is it that things go horribly wrong? So that innocent mistake, that basic ignorance, comes from misunderstanding the very nature of mind. As a result, the primary way that we see things is in terms of myself and then all the rest. Viewing things like this, the odds can seem overwhelming. If there's all those others, who's left to look out for me? So it's very easy then to see things in terms of what I want, what I don't want, and what I overlook, and acting based on that. Sometimes in our pursuit of happiness, in our wanting, we might unconsciously end up causing harm to ourselves or others in the pursuit of happiness. So this wanting can be troublesome at times. And this wanting, this kind of inconvenient nature of it, what's that about? From one child who was vintage late 20th century, noticed that when there was a toy that he really, really wanted, and he campaigned for a long time with his parents to get the toy, and finally he was successful. He got the toy. And then he said, after I got the toy I wanted, the wanting didn't go away. We can so easily fall into thinking that the solution for wanting is to give in to what the wanting is. But as this child pointed out, it's not a final solution. So what can we do about this wanting? There's a number of approaches. One is, I guess we could say, the approach of abstaining, of saying no Or taking the kind of approach we do with New Year's resolutions. I will not do this, dot, dot, dot. I will do this, dot, dot, dot. And for some of us, that's a great technique. For others of us, it doesn't work so well. By the end of January, sometimes that resolution is not only not in effect, it's not even remembered. So there's another approach to take. And it's the one of looking directly at the nature of the wanting. So the way this would work would be the next time we notice there's something that we want, instead of just letting our attention rest with the object of what we want, but that's usually the approach we have, but we make a small shift and shift our attention over to the wanting. Sometimes this is called dropping the storyline. Opportunities to do this practice comes up frequently on a daily basis once you start looking for it. Then there's a third way. One of my teachers, who Lorna referred to, Kala Rinpoche, said that an antidote for wanting is knowing when enough is enough. Well, from experience, I can tell you that's a memorable statement. Knowing when enough is enough. Also memorable is the question that comes right after that: how much is enough? Over the years, I found I'm not the only person who had that question. And years is the true measure here. I've grappled with this for a long time. And finally come to the conclusion that enough is what everyone has at the moment. For example, in this lifetime, I don't have any children. From the time I was about 14, I thought it would be nice to have children. And the way things have worked out is there have been times that there have been children in my life, upwards of 30 sometimes. Sometimes one or two, sometimes none. So at the times when there's 30 in my life, enough is 30. At the times when there's none, enough is none. Likewise, if one was to go off to the grocery store in pursuit of a pineapple, really, really wanting a pineapple. That's what I need. A nice, juicy, sweet, delicious pineapple. However, when I get to the store, there are none. I've gone out of pineapple season. At this point, there's really nothing to do. However, our mind usually doesn't stop at nothing to do. It grumbles over, "Oh, I really wanted that pineapple. Oh, and there isn't one here. Oh, it always goes like this in my life. Just when I figure out what I want, it's not available." And on goes the story. So instead, how would that play out, this knowing when enough is enough? So there's a short phrase to help us. This comes from Bokar Rinpoche. "This is enough for me." Five words. This is enough for me. it's a trick in a way. It's a trick to take our mind off our unrequited wanting and place it on something that is happening, that we are experiencing. Now, in my experience, when a want is not fulfilled, trying to say this is not enough for me can evoke a backlash. It's like, oh no, it isn't enough for me. So there's an alternative phrase. This one is more neutral. And it's simply, this moment is like this. We're not saying it's good, we're not saying it's bad, we're not saying even that it's enough or not. It just, this is how it is. It takes the struggle out of the experience. The struggle is what adds more suffering to the basic experience. This is the basic experience of what we want not being there. And then we just add more suffering by chatting ourselves up about how awful that is. And then all the other times that we didn't get what we wanted either. And we can just get a real fire going there. While we're doing that, while we're cooking up this resentment, suffering, irritation, we're missing out on experiencing our own lives. Because that dialogue, that story that we're creating, is a fabrication of our own mind. It has nothing to do with what's going on in this present moment. The only life we have is what's going on in this present moment. And if we hijack ourselves and deprive ourselves from the experience of our own life, we've lost a lot. As for our own life, by the way, how are you now? Physically? Mentally? Emotionally? If all the way along we've been making this innocent mistake in our pursuit of happiness that instead brings us at the least disappointment, what would acting without making this mistake look like? There's a story I'd like to share with you that gives one possible scenario of how this might play out. It's called The Money Man. It's a Tibetan story. And there's some explanation here at the beginning for some of the terms in the story. It goes like this. A prayer wheel, or mani wheel, is a wheel filled with innumerable mantras and inscriptions wrapped clockwise around the central axis. Some prayer wheels are tiny, like little tops. Others are huge, filling an entire room, and one turns the wheel by holding its handles and walking clockwise around it. Others are attached to running streams or waterfalls so that they can harness the natural energy and spread benedictions throughout the land. The faithful believe that spinning these prayer wheels or hanging prayer flags in the wind actualizes the inscribed prayers. So there's some overlap here and some similarity with the suttis here. The Tibetan province of Kham is akin to America's Wild West. The people of Kham are great equestrians, and like all who ride regularly, they love their horses. Until about a century ago, Kham was carved into a dozen smaller kingdoms, each of which had its own army, raised by forcible conscription. And now the story begins. There was once an old man in far eastern Kham, known as the Mani Man, because day and night he could always be found devoutly spinning his small homemade prayer wheel. The wheel was filled with the mantras of great compassion, Om Mani Padme Hum. The Mani Man lived with his son and their one fine horse. The son was the joy of the man's life. The boy's pride and joy was the horse. The man's wife, after a long life of virtue and service, had long since departed for more fortunate rebirths. Father and son lived, free from excessive wants and needs, in one of several rough stone houses near a river on the edge of the flat plains. One day their steed disappeared. The neighbors bewailed the loss of the old man's sole material asset. But the stoic old man just kept turning his prayer wheel, reciting Om Mani Padme Hum, Tibet's national mantra. To whoever inquired or expressed condolences, he simply said, "Give thanks for everything. Who can say what is good or bad? We'll see." After several days, the splendid creature returned, followed by a pair of wild mustangs. These, the old man and his son, swiftly trained. Then everyone sang songs of celebration and congratulated the old man on his unexpected good fortune. The man simply smiled over his prayer wheel and said, "I am grateful, but who knows? We shall see." Then, while racing one of the mustangs, the boy fell and shattered his leg. Some neighbors carried him home, cursing the wild horse and bemoaning the boy's fate. But the old man, sitting at his beloved son's bedside, just kept turning his prayer wheel around and around while softly muttering gentle Lord Chenrezig's mantra of great compassion. He neither complained nor answered their protestations to fate, but simply nodded his head affably, reiterating what he had said before. "The Buddha is beneficent. I am grateful for my son's life. We shall see." The next week, military officers appeared seeking young conscripts for the ongoing border war. All the local boys were immediately taken away, except for the bedridden son of the Mani Man. Then the neighbors congratulated the old man on his great good fortune, attributing such luck to the good karma accumulated by the old man's incessantly spinning prayer wheel and the constant mantras on his cracked lips. He smiled and said nothing. One day, when the boy and his father were watching their horses graze on the prairie grass, the taciturn old man suddenly began to sing. Life just goes around and around, up and down, like a water wheel. Our lives are like its buckets, being emptied and refilled again and again. Like the potter's clay, our physical existences are fashioned into one form after another. The shapes are broken and reformed again and again. The low will be high, and the high will fall down. The dark will grow light, and the rich lose all. If you, my son, were an extraordinary child, off to a monastery as an incarnation, they would carry you. If you were too bright, my son, shackled to other people's disputes, at an official's desk you would be. One horse is one horse's worth of trouble. Wealth is good, but too soon loses its savor, and can be a burden, a source of quarrel in the end. No one knows what karma awaits us, but what we sow now will be reaped in lives to come. That is certain. So be kind to one and all, and don't be biased based upon illusions regarding gain and loss. Have neither hope nor fear, expectations nor anxiety. Give thanks for everything, whatever your lot may be. Accept everything, accept everyone, and follow the Buddha's ineffable law. Be simple and careful. Remain naturally at ease, in peace. You can shoot arrows at the sky if you like, my son, but they'll inevitably fall back to earth. So there's, near the end there, there's a reference of reincarnation, of us taking different forms, having different lives. But as well, we can apply that within this life, that every present moment is made up of, it's a composite of various circumstances. They can shift and change, and they do. It's like living inside a kaleidoscope. The one configuration that is wonderful for us, the horses came, yay, can shift and change. The horse threw him off and broke his leg. Whoa. That what we experience, we can't expect to endure. So, if we can, appreciating the present moment and understanding the present moment is difficult for us, that this too is not free from impermanence. Every situation will change. Every situation is therefore workable. Our lives are not carved in stone. None of us could grow to adulthood if that was the situation. So there's parts of impermanence we readily embrace. There's other parts of impermanence that we experience with a sting. Coming back to antidotes for wanting, there's one more. There's a fourth one. And it's basically wishing the welfare of others. In the hymnal, There's a short prayer by the Buddhist teacher Thich Nhat Hanh, number 505, and one short paragraph from that says, "Let us pray that we ourselves cease to be the cause of suffering to each other." The mantra mentioned in the story of the Mani Man, Om Mani Padme Hum, is a mantra for the welfare of all beings, the mantra of compassion. So I invite you to join me at this time to recite and sing this mantra together. It's very simple to learn, and it's written in the order of service. Oh.